You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
You're listening to the Show Jumping Podcast, a fun and informative show for riders, owners, trainers, grooms, and fans of all levels.
I'm Ashley Winch in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
And I'm Christy McCormick in Saratoga Springs, New York. And you're listening to the Show Jumping Podcast, where we answer your riding questions and chat with fellow horse enthusiasts about the world of show jumping. On today's podcast, I am joined by my good friends who work at the Skidmore College Riding Program, Karen Herf and Belinda Colgan, both of whom have been part of my life since I've lived up here in Saratoga Springs, New York, and they run a wonderful program at Skidmore College for riders who are interested in riding on an intercollegiate team. So thanks, Karen and Belinda, for joining. How are you guys doing?
We're well. How are you doing, Christy?
Great. Can both of you just start by giving a little bit of background on how each of you began your current roles at Skidmore?
So I, Belinda, actually went to Skidmore College. Okay. I came and was a business major and an econ minor. I graduated in 2004 and just wasn't ready to start my next journey of higher education to get an MBA and opted to stay and work for a little bit. And I never left.
And, and here you are.
Here I am. I was an assistant coach for, I think, 16 years, and I've been head coach since 2019.
Great. And you were assistant coach under Cindy Ford, correct?
Correct. Yep. Okay. And Cindy Ford was here for over 30, I think around 31 years.
Wow. Did she really, I'm actually not even sure of the history of the college program there. How, you know, was there somebody there before her? Did she get this started?
So she was hired actually as director originally. And then after she was here for, I think, a year and a half, 2 years, Sarah Hofstetter had been the head coach and she was like, nope, not doing it anymore. Cindy, you take it. So Cindy became head coach and director simultaneously. And then when she retired, the job was split again, which it was originally supposed to be that way anyway. So I became head coach and Karen became the director. Prior to that, there were others as well. But the program really kind of got its full steam, so to speak. And I think 1990 when we won the first national championship that we have.
Mm-hmm. At the time, too, Christy, there was a dressage team here. There was a polo team here. And then there was a hunt seat team. Yeah. Wow. So there were a lot of competing interests here. And at some point during Cindy's tenure, there was really a program review. And it was decided at that time that they would focus on the hunt seat, which I think, you know, obviously has its pros and cons, but benefited the team in that we were really able to specialize. And it just probably changed how we view the program in terms of the lessons we offer, the horses we have and all of that. But you can imagine, I mean, those three disciplines need very different things in terms of the ring and all of that.
Sure.
So, yeah.
And I assume, you know, that would be a challenging position for one trainer to be in charge of all of those disciplines. And did you have lots of different staff that were running those three programs?
At the time, yes, from what I know. And again, this was before Belinda and I got here, because I also arrived in 2000 and it had all been streamlined beforehand. But my understanding, yes, that there was a dressage coach, there was somebody who was doing polo, and then Cindy was doing the hunt seat. So it was a lot.
A lot going on. So how does it run now? Now you've just got the hunt seat. So we're talking just about jumping and flatting, right? And how does a typical day at the barn work for you two?
Busy.
Yeah.
So we think of it, if I may, going back to like our prospective student tours, we think of it, so we have the program, and the program is open to everybody. So we have students who fill our intro to riding classes. They tend to be seniors, and then they tend to, you know, at the end of the semester go, darn it, why didn't I start earlier? you know, because they have a really fun time.
Sort of a fun elective. Yeah.
Exactly. But the students here can get credit to ride. They take 2 lessons a week. Those lessons, again, they're geared towards their level, you know, and their experience. And we have everything from those people who are learning to ride with us to people who have been showing. Students can bring their own horse if they want to. They don't have to. Okay. So every year we have anywhere from 5 to 12 student boarders.
And how many horses do you generally have total?
Your barn during the school year, we probably have anywhere from 50 to 60.
Okay.
So the school owns about 40 horses, and the rest will be community and student boarders.
Got it.
Yep. And so outside of the program, or part of the program, I should say. So, right. So lessons are offered to everybody, obviously, or I should say they're
and
scheduled.
By everybody, you mean the public or by the school?
No, to the students. It's open to all the students. Yes. And, you know, it is limited by obviously the number of horses that we do have. And also their schedules, the student schedules, to be honest. So we schedule lessons around their academic obligations. And truthfully, there are just some semesters where kids are so booked with what they're doing academically that they're not able to ride. And then the next semester, something will open up and then they have room. So you asked about what else we do then. So then an important subset of that is the team. So in terms of the team, students try out for the team. And if they make the team, then they're both taking those lessons I just talked about, right? 2 lessons a week. Maybe they take those for credit. And then they also have 3 team practices a week. And those usually happen in the evenings, like Tuesday, Thursday evenings, or Friday afternoon is devoted to team time. And again, though, you know, students with their academic schedules, sometimes it's a little bit tricky. And so they might have to practice at other times. You can imagine, and Belinda can talk more to this, but we can never have the entire team all at once.
How many students make up your team?
So I'm allowed to have 30 on my roster. Okay. I usually have between, you know, 24 and 30. 26 is kind of like a really good number.
Mm-hmm.
It just in terms of like scheduling and our horse use and that kind of stuff. And the team is all different levels. I have riders that are open riders that are kids that have competed and won more than 6 blue ribbons at 3-6 or higher. And then everything down to riders that have had less than 24 weeks of riding lessons in their entire life. It's a big range of riders. But the you know, the really cool thing about the team in terms of the IHSA is it's just as important for that intro rider to win their class as it is for their open rider to win their class.
Mm-hmm.
So it enables a true team feel, which is, you know, for the riders, it's kind of the first time to have that, right? Like,
sure, we have such a
team with your horse.
Yeah,
right?
But it's an individual sport. And we're, you know, as juniors, we're never exposed to riding. You might be part of a barn, which feels like a team, but you're always riding for yourself. So, So that's cool. That's a nice change into that. So you must go a little crazy with trying to organize your schedule, the horse's schedule, as well as this, when the students are coming and going, and you have boarders.
And we have boarders. So it is, it's quite a puzzle. I tend to be the one who does the scheduling.
Yeah.
And so you should keep in mind too, that we have 2 other instructors here. So Amanda Wadsworth and Sasha LaRosa also teach. Actually, we also have a part-time instructor too, Lauren Graves. So at the beginning of each semester, Christy, I ask for all the students to give me their academic schedules. And then we put the puzzle together.
Oh my, that must take quite a bit of time. I remember days of organizing the show schedule, you know, we talk about a whiteboard and having to, you know, plan ahead for that. But this sounds even more complicated.
It is. The good thing is, though, is it takes about a week for it to actually settle in. There's always, you know, the first draft and then students change their schedule. And so there's a second and third. But honestly, by the time, I don't know, the second or third week of classes is here, the schedule is set. Everybody's settled into it. And that stays that way for the entire semester. And so then we just change it at the beginning of each semester.
So does that, how does that relate to the horses' schedules? Are they in a typical program like, you know, show barns are used to, where they get worked 6 days a week? Or are those also, do their schedules vary too?
Most of our horses work 6 days a week, but it does vary. We have, you know, a couple horses that are a little bit older and, you know, their schedules and their bodies might really need them to work only 3 days a week. And mm-hmm. that's fine. Right. You know, we're very lucky to have our horse walker. So we have some that, you know, again, for their own sakes, and, you know, they're in their 20s or so. So they go on the walker in the morning and then they have their lesson. And then the next day, maybe they only go on the walker and then they have another hand walker groom or love later in the afternoon, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, and we, with the 40-ish horses that we have, they all sort of have their place. So, you know, we have the horses that we sort of consider my team horses. And those are horses that will primarily just deal with my upper level team riders or
and be
team
used riders for competition and yeah.
Exactly. And then we have some horses that, you know, their job is to literally walk trot and teach kids how to trot and post, and that is all they do in their life. And so then that, everything is insane.
That's actually what I wanted to talk about with you two is what is, you know, so the program for sure, and I would love for any listeners to get a little idea of what you guys do and maybe I have a few questions later for, you know, from a prospective rider, how to get into your program and things like that. But I recently did a podcast about retiring horses. And as you two know, I've also donated horses of my own to your program. Can you talk a little bit about the horses you have and what, you know, is every horse you have that's not a boarder, are they or student owned? Are they all donated? And what is their... You know, what are the different levels of what they can do once they're in your program?
Sure. So yes, every Skidmore owned horse has been donated and they come from a range of backgrounds. Although I will say in common, I think most of them, 95% have shown in some capacity. And the truth is that, oh, who knows, maybe they're just, they've gotten older. Maybe they have a little injury. Maybe they're just not happy doing that show job anymore. Mm-hmm. And they need a new career.
Yeah.
And so the owners or the trainers will contact us and they'll, you know, we'll ask a lot of questions and they'll send videos if they want to. You know, we're looking for a horse that's safe. We don't mind a little quirky because we all have personalities.
Yeah.
We ask for them to be as honest as they can be about the horse's history and their health and their soundness. We'll take that horse for a 30-day trial, sometimes longer if needed. And that's just a period for us to get to know the horse and to make sure that this is going to be an okay place for them, that they're going to settle into our routine. You know, we don't have acres and acres and acres, to be honest. We are limited in our land. But as Belinda said, we have the walker, we have turnouts, we have the indoor ring, we have the outdoor ring. So there's a lot that we can do for our horses to keep them moving and keep them healthy. But mm-hmm. again, it's just, you know, every horse we have to decide or have to see if this is gonna fit for them.
Sure.
I will say, and Belinda she has a better memory than I do, but I would say most horses do. Most horses, it's great. They come in and they're like, oh yeah, this is like the horse shows. No problem. I'm good here. Every now and again, you have a horse who's just like, nope, this isn't working. And that's okay. Cause we want the donor to feel comfortable and happy that their horse is going to a place where that horse will be happy. And then once they're accepted into the program, there they go. We just sort of figure out what their routine needs to be. You know, how often do they need to be on the walker? How often do they need turnout? You know, what kind of lessons are they happy to give? What kind of riders do they need?
We definitely find too that with our donated horses that after about 6 months here, they sort of take a breath yeah. and they sort of truly settle into life as a college horse and just the change in the expectations for what they have. I mean, our school horses that are capable of jumping bigger jumps still, they pretty much only ever jump 2.6 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
If they're able to go to nationals with us, they'll jump maybe 2.9 if they're, you know, the opener or intermediate horses. But we try really hard to keep our expectations for them on a lesser side so that they can sort of take a breath mm-hmm. and sort of embrace the college life because it is different. And it just, it gives those horses that are coming off of a fairly intense show career and fairly high expectations a lot of times, gives them a chance to sort of shine in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and most of them really thrive when they figure out that their job is to kind of help the kid learn their next step, and that's all they got to do. And, you know, their horse show career might be jumping 3 2-foot courses twice a year at our IHSA horse show.
Yes, I like I said, I've, as you two know, I've donated a couple to you, and my reasons for any donation were, you know, I have a show horse who's had a successful career and is coming to a point where they're just unhappy doing it for whatever reasons. Maybe it's soundness and they can't keep up with a, you know, high level job anymore with that much pressure on their legs, or maybe it's just the horse show environment. You know, we bought it as a young horse and it's just a little more overwhelming, you know, all of the different rings and the different horse shows and the sort of escalated stress on them that they don't do well. And to have a job, but they're not ready to go in a field. You know, maybe they're eight years old.
Right.
And I do feel horses, I'm certainly now getting to the side of what do the horses really want versus what do we want out of them? And I do feel like horses enjoy being exercised and being worked, and some of them enjoy jumping and some of them don't. But I think as a horseman, it's really important to understand what's best for each horse. And I am all for owners who can pay for a horse's retirement. But again, if a horse has a little life left in them, it sounds like your program at least is the direction where it's a lot simpler, it's a lot easier or less stressful on their bodies and their brains. And, you know, I mean, at least the ones I've seen that I've given to you have really thrived in that environment. What happens when they are no longer useful to you and actually do need to be retired, whether that's for soundness or age or whatever?
Well, we actually, since I took over as director, we now, assuming that a horse has gone through the trial period and we accept it into the program, we now include a right of first refusal.
Okay.
And that is a way for the donor to say, hey, listen, when the horse is done, I want this horse back. I will retire it.
Mm.
And so that has actually been incredibly successful.
Oh,
yeah, I know.
That's wonderful,
right?
Actually, that the owner then still has that, you know, either connection to the horse and can provide it for the horse.
Yep. So we've had instances where even if that owner can't take the horse, they help us find a place.
Okay.
We work very, very hard to find our horses their retirement place, like their true retirement. When I say this, mm-hmm. I mean, like, when they're done here, they're not going on to another career.
Right.
They're you know, they're usually like, okay, it's really time for me to be turned out. But we have a network of alumni and friends that we make a lot of phone calls, you know, and the truth is sometimes a horse might be here for a little while waiting for its turn. But we work really hard to find just a nice place for them to retire and all that. The truth is, and I'm going to step off the record for a second, but I hope I can say this, Christy, and I'll step back on.
Sure.
You know, the truth is that there are times when horses get to an age where we might feel as though we don't want to send them to a paddock out to pasture because, I mean, there's so many reasons. Maybe. I don't know. They're just that much older. They're having a harder time giving up or whatever. And we try very hard then to give them some time here to just kind of be quietly themselves. And then we sometimes have to make that ultimate decision.
Have to put them down.
Yeah.
Well, horses have end of lives. They have to end their life at some point. And that's sometimes is the hard decision to make, but for the better of the horse, you know?
Yeah. We never make that decision lightly, and we will bend over backwards to find that horse a home, and we will wait. You know, we'll wait if somebody, like I said, we had a person who had been connected to a horse that was donated, and she said to us, he was ready to retire, and she said, I absolutely want him, but I need 6 months before I can find him a home. No problem. You know, we will wait because it's way more important for us to find him that happy place.
And when you say find them a home, does that generally mean you give them to somebody, or you like who pays for that? I guess is the basic question.
Okay. Yep. So if somebody has said, yes, I will happily retire that horse, we have a form they fill out and they take ownership.
Okay.
We are explicit though in that we ask, we insist that if at any point for any reason it's no longer working out, that horse comes back to us. We never want to see a horse leave us and then disappear. These horses, we stay in contact with people who have retired them just to know. And like I said, there's just, yes, they have to take on the financial burden because it becomes their horse.
Sure.
But we never want them to feel strapped to the point that they get in, you know, the person gets into a financial situation that they feel they can't get out of. And then they have to make an awful decision.
Right.
We would rather take the horse back, you know, bring him back and we'll
figure out something else.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Speaking of funding, how does your program get funded? Is that what tuition covers? How does, you know, horses, as we know, the overhead is so high. How does that work for you, for Skidmore?
We are very lucky in that we are Skidmore College Riding Program. And so we are given a budget each year. We do our best to stay within that budget. That budget includes everything from veterinary care to office supplies to feed and bedding. And it's hard sometimes, Christy. It's hard, especially, you know, as prices go up before, you know, after the budget has been given out at the beginning of the fiscal year. But we work very hard to stay conscious of that. Our income includes horse shows that we run, board, lessons.
There is a class fee as well per semester that all the students pay. Okay. And it is very minimal, you know, because we are funded by the college, we're able to keep costs pretty low.
Yeah.
So the lesson fee per lesson that the college kids pay, even though they pay by the semester, ends up being around like $20-ish. So it's very, very economical as far as horses go. You know, in terms of the budgeting as well, I also have a separate team budget. And the kids do on the team pay a very small team fee. They pay, I think it's like $250 a semester. And that's just a way for the team to sort of help pay towards the horse care a little bit because they are program horses, not team horses. But the team also does a lot of fundraising. So that fundraised money helps pay for our like CWD saddles. We do have a partnership with CWD. So we get some good discounts. Nothing's free by any means, but our rep, Terea, does an amazing job helping us out. So right now, I think we have 18 CWDs that we have been able to purchase by the team for the horses in the program. And every year they get fitted so that it helps keep them in, you know, the best shape they can be with all the riding they have to do.
Right, right.
So I was going to say too, in terms of the program budget, we try very hard to break even, Christy. We try very hard to break even.
I hear that. Yes.
But that's one of the things. We are very fortunate because we are a program that is supported by Skidmore College. Our team is a fully funded varsity sport. And so it just, our financial demands are a little different than, you know, a private barn.
A show barn. Yes.
A show barn or a club team. It's a different, right? A different ball of wax, I guess.
Very much so.
And, you know, I could talk a lot about barn financing and expenses and how to make, you know, A plus B equals C when that's not really stretching. But I'm coming from, you know, a show barn of private clients who are paying me or were paying me, you know, pretty high fees in board and training and riding and all of those kind of things. And you are a program that is interesting because you balance, you know, you have to balance paying for the horses that are donated, but you're also, I mean, Skidmore's not cheap to go to, let's be honest, right? So you have kids that are, you know, relatively well-to-do kids that are paying for this college that they can ride at. So I so see it from the side of trying to make the barn function and never, ever being, you know, lacking for the horses at all or the riders that are joined there. But also having the college to support it behind you is has got to be a nice, you know, you have a you're given a budget at least every year.
Yeah, so. It's huge. It's huge. And I have to be honest, I don't know how the powers that be at Skidmore have come up with the budget. I think it's one of those things that started long before. And of course, there's always increases each year. I mean, there's a recognition of, you know, general life increases. But it is, it's, we feel very fortunate to be supported that way. We feel as though we are able to care for these horses, I mean, as best we can, but in a good way, between the walker and injections if needed, supplements, a Beamer blanket, an Equivibe. Like, we have therapeutic resources to keep them as happy and sound as they can be. But we're fortunate. We're fortunate to be a part of Skidmore College. It's a different perspective than when you're on your own, when you're having to do it with whatever borders, et cetera, that you have. Yes.
That's your budget for you know, running your place. And what kind of fundraising do you do?
The team does the primary fundraising right now. We do something called the Blue Ribbon Challenge, which is sort of a fun way for parents and alums and friends and family to sort of follow along with our season and also support. So people pledge a certain amount of money to donate for every blue ribbon the team wins throughout the season. So we tend to win somewhere between 80 and 100 ribbons a year, basically. Last year in 2023, we won actually 100, which was really cool. So they can donate 25 cents or they can donate $10 or as much as they want. So that usually brings in anywhere from 3,000 to around 6,000 a year, which isn't a lot. But, you know, again, that's right there. That was our Beamer blanket that the team bought for the program. And the college has some other fundraising things they do as well throughout the year, such as All In To Win, which is a full campus pledge thing that they do. There's a couple others. And then, honestly, we just, you know, have some pretty good people in advancement that really help us with their relationships with some of our alum, relationships we have with our alums. And they might say, you know, we're going to give $25,000 over 2 years or 3 years. And, you know, it just kind of helps keep things going.
And mostly, I would just imagine most of these are, they're horse people that have been involved in your
program. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Most of them are alums. You know, and hopefully sooner than later, we will have a large fundraising agenda for a new indoor, then maybe new facility. But we haven't had a green light on that yet.
So, right.
You know, so that hasn't happened. But, you know, the program itself doesn't do a lot of fundraising on a yearly basis. It's really for the fundraising is really for the team.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay.
Are you looking for a natural long-term solution for your horse's digestive health? Reline GI goes beyond just treating systems. This unique combination of gut-supporting hyaluronan and immune-boosting beta-glucan works in harmony with your horse's body to soothe and protect their digestive system. Unlike other options that can disrupt digestion and nutrient absorption, Reline GI maintains your horse's natural balance. Don't just rely on our claims. Reline GI is trusted by leading veterinarians and supported by scientific research, including a study by Dr. Nathan Slovis that demonstrated its effectiveness in reducing ulcers in active horses. Plus, it's Clean Sport certified, making it safe for use in competitions. Don't forget, for an additional 10% off, use code SJP at checkout.
You can enjoy your favorite equine videos all in one place with Ride TV, the ultimate equine streaming platform. The newly relaunched Ride TV has all the series you love, like Mini Horses and Ridiculous Ranches, plus top-tier training videos and event footage from Horse and Rider On Demand and BarrelRacing.com. Live the action, learn from the pros, love the stories. Subscribe to Ride TV today for only $19.99 to see where your ride takes you. Visit ridetvgo.tv to subscribe.
Well, I have some questions here from, I collected some from a couple of prospective high school or prospective college riders in high school, if you guys wouldn't mind.
Of course.
Doing a little lightning round.
Yep.
Okay. First one. What is a typical day in the life of a collegiate rider?
So
And I guess this is more of the horse day, not necessarily the academics.
Well, it's I'm going to say this, at least from our perspective, and Belinda can change it if she wants to, but those are very intertwined because okay. we're Division 3, which doesn't matter so much for the IHSA or the team, but in terms of our philosophy, academics come first. You know, the students are here because of what Skidmore College has to offer. And Skidmore College has a lot to offer. I mean, from classes to abroad to everything, right? And we truly mean it. Students are here because they're bettering their lives and they're figuring out what they want to do after. It's a huge bonus that there's this really great riding program a mile away from campus. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, any rider, whether they're just part of the program or the team, you know, we let them know that number one, they need to be taking advantage of what Skidmore has to offer. And we want them to do well. And in particular, we want the team students to do well because quite frankly, it reflects well on us, right? When sure. you have team members who are taking advantage and doing well in their classes, awesome. So students are, we hope, taking time to get to their classes, doing their studies. And then each day they're finding time to come to the barn. So a team rider will perhaps in the middle of a Monday come down to have their regularly scheduled lesson. And then on Tuesday evening, they'll be down for their team practice. So it's each day is very mixed up, meaning like it's all around their academics that will determine when they come to the barn.
And how many days a week that they ride?
Yeah. So the kids that are on the team, they end up taking 5 lessons a week. So I like all my team members to be in a class for credit, which is those 2 lessons during the week for like during the day. And that's for in the program. And those lessons might be with any of us. And then their team practice on top of that is usually with me, sometimes with Karen, depending on the schedule. But those practices will be, again, 3 additional lessons to the 2 that are with them in the program. And again, about based around their academic schedule. So mm-hmm. I'll have students that have a terrible schedule Tuesday, Thursday. So they might ride twice Monday, twice Friday, and once Wednesday.
Wow.
And then the team also does see a strength and conditioning coach on campus. And they see that strength and conditioning coach twice a week, usually Monday and Wednesday. I don't teach on Wednesdays, and Mondays I do teach in the evening, but not as late. So they're able to, you know, have their workouts on those days. And they do a lot of core, upper body and that kind of stuff to try to, you know, counterbalance
out
those stirrups.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. So it is a lot of riding. It is demanding. They don't have true like barn chores where some programs they are responsible for helping out in the barn, like doing stalls and things like that. But we do have an adopt-a-horse program with the kids mm-hmm. so that they have 1 or 2, usually 2 or a horse and a half, they're assigned each year. That's their adopt-a-horse. And the kids get to choose too. Some, you know, if they have a favorite, they usually get mm-hmm. their favorite. And, you know, they're responsible for making sure that that horse is in good care. They love them. They do the ice boots. They do the beamer. They do the Equivibe. They graze them, they walk them, they groom them, use the vacuum, all, you know, whatever it is that they want to do to get that little extra love.
Built-in grooming system, you might say.
Exactly.
For your barn. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's great for you for as far as staffing purposes that you may or may not have, and the horses and them to learn on. Because we've all, you know, I've talked a lot about what students or what riders, you know, as juniors these days learn on the ground. That's so much in some ways, so much more important than what you learn in the saddle.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
Do you find that there are some students who it's their first time really doing any barn work and they've just been riders?
Yeah. So Ashley Woodhouse, she graduated in 2005, I believe. She was inducted into our Hall of Fame last year. She won the Castillon Cup while at Skidmore. And when she came, she had only ever been at a full service barn. And mm-hmm. she was so excited to learn how to groom and do all these things. And then she stayed and rode her horse, kept her horse with us and stayed for a summer and did the Grand Prix and stuff with us and was so excited to learn how to unbraid and go home and show off all her new skills to her barn at home. It was really fun.
Do you find, without naming any names, that there are some students who go, oh my, this is much harder than I expected, or this isn't what I signed up for?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd say they say, oh my, this is different and new. But I have to say, I've I have yet to encounter anybody who's like, oh, I don't want to.
Not I don't want to. Everybody rises to the challenge.
They do, and they want to be involved. And it's, you know, the team is really cute because Sunday is their hangout at the barn and take care of the horses day. And it's like a lot of them come and just learn. Like they just,
that's nice.
By hanging out with those who have more experience, by grooming those extra horses, by doing all that, they do learn. I have yet to meet anybody who says, no, I don't want to.
And we're in a real unique situation where we get these kids for 4 years.
Yeah.
And our goal over the 4 years is to make them as correct and strong and educated as we can. Whereas trainers who have them in, you know, a program at home, their goal is to get them to the show ring.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. And to keep them showing and winning and happy that way. But like, I'm, you know, we may get an open rider in that can't post without their stirrups. Mm. And we're like, guess what, honey? Like, it's time to,
time to learn.
Figure this out. Right. And, you know, we do a little bit of rocking of their world sometimes. Mm-hmm. And they love it. They really do. You know, and it's those riders that really buy into the program and buy into what we do. They thrive. And that's not to say anything bad about the trainers they've had at home.
It's not at all.
It's just different goal, different things. You know, it's a luxury for us.
Yeah, it is a luxury because as a private trainer, you know, I'm always interested in, first of all, it's a business, you know,
people
are paying us to be there, not just their trainer, but to help them win, to help them stay confident, to help them, find the right horse for them. You all have to find the right horse for them in the barn, I'm sure too, but we are looking at it from you're going to pay quite a bit of money to own a horse that you are going to then, you know, hopefully be very successful on. And it is a very different perspective. I've talked about even teaching that way. You know, I've come to you, I know we did that fun clinic a while back and I loved doing a clinic at your facility because I had zero bias towards anybody who was a student of my own, where I could just come in and teach and give the information about riding and work versus am I giving this student that's paying me, you know, too much work today? I don't want them to leave unhappy. I want them to make sure they're still thriving, but also, you know, sort of weighing what we have to do to get to the ring tomorrow. Don't wear them out so much. And yeah, it's a very different perspective to be able to, and I would imagine refreshing one at that, to say, this is our program and this is what we're going to learn. So you're here now. And that's great.
I will say this too. It is, I would honestly say two things. One is, as Belinda said, for many students, and it's sort of I have learned in my own teaching to have a sense of humor and to bring it up that first year, that they all have to be willing to learn a slightly new way. While we work out of, you know, the hunter seat equitation playbook, our expectations and our needs in terms of our school horses and what Belinda needs from her team riders, it's a little different than what they've experienced up until that point.
Sure.
And so they really do have to be open to the fact that we're going to teach a little differently, and they might in some ways feel a little more limited, meaning, you know, our horses, we're not going to take out and jump 3 foot, right? Yep. Like that we're going to go over ground rails. We're going to go over cross rails. We're going to talk about corners. We're going to talk about track, that kind of thing. And so it's just sort of, we break it down a lot more. And it's interesting because I think at first, sometimes the kids are like, what the heck are we doing? Until they start to see the results that when you break it down and do these fundamental things, how it translates to riding school horses. And I guess that's part of where the difference is too, right? Where you're teaching them on their own horses with these show goals in mind, we're teaching them on school horses with the intercollegiate show in mind. And it's just a little different, right?
It is different. How often do those shows occur?
So you can have up to 10 IHSA horse shows during your regular season. Our region hosts 8. So our first horse show is, I think this year is going to be the third week in October.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have three, four shows in November. And then we have 3 shows in the spring. And then postseason starts in the end of March, and we have regionals, which is individual riders, zones, which is team and individual, and then hopefully nationals, which is in the first week in May. And this coming year, we go back to try-on for nationals.
Ah, got it. So you're still traveling a little bit as well as showing in your own facility.
Yeah, exactly. So we ourselves, the Skidmore, host three horse shows during the regular season. We'll host two in the fall and one in the spring. And then we always host regionals because we have the heat and the bigger indoor and the facility and stuff. And then we travel to Morrisville State College, as well as where Sienna rides, Sienna College rides. We go to Dutch Manor, which is in Guilderland, New York. And then I usually take the team. The last few years, we compete in the Tournament of Champions as well, which is an IHSA-style competition, which is not does not count towards points in the IHSA. So I have riders that maybe can't show much in the IHSA horse shows because they can't point out because they need them for postseason. So they have a chance to get to compete in the tournament. And we also get to ride in those horse shows against other schools that we might see at postseason at nationals as well as zones. So it's just a really good way to get the kids out of their comfort zone. So we have a busy schedule. You know, the tournament tournaments start in September, end of September, and end in March.
So it's a full two semester sport where you're you're in college there, you're right, and you're on the riding team, you ride, you're with you ride. All the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So we're considered a spring sport because that's when our championship is.
Yeah.
But you know, we our classes start the week following Labor Day and practices start 2 weeks later, and we just go straight through.
Keep going.
Yeah. Yep. Which, you know, everyone who's in a in some sort of a college collegiate sport and is dedicated, you know, they want to play their sport, but definitely kids that ride horses, it's a it's a lifestyle, you know? So it's, I shouldn't say almost, I've never had to beg a kid to come ride. It's usually me being like, don't you need to go do work?
Well, and you're hopefully, you're always getting someone who wants to, you know, join the team, which my next question is, what are the eligibility requirements for someone who does want to join the team?
So it's their IHSA eligibility for their level depends on their USCF show record. So an open rider cannot have won more than, or has won, sorry, more than six blue ribbons in an USCF horse show higher at 3.6 or higher.
Okay.
A limit rider has won, not won more than six blue ribbons. So they have won six or less blue ribbons at 3 foot or lower.
Okay.
And an intermediate rider is in between. We also have riders that have not competed at USCF horse shows at all. Those are novice riders.
Okay.
And then, so they would, that's the old walk, trot, canter level.
Yep.
And then,
so they don't even have to have jumped. They can just ride on the flat.
Correct. They they only compete on the flat, and they can never have shown at a USCF horse show. So they can do the IEA, but they can't have shown USCF.
Got
and then intro riders are riders that have had less than 24 weeks of lessons in their life. So for intro, sometimes, you know, it's great when you get those kids that have done camps and stuff. So they've ridden and they know how to post a little bit, but they haven't done consistent lessons because they're just that little bit farther along. But that also is where, you know, we get intro riders from our intro classes. Keeping an eye on those. Or I also, you know, have a kid that just graduated, or actually two kids that just graduated, that friends on the team were like, come try out, come do the intro. And they were like, maybe. So I, you know, put them on the team. I'm like, great, we can teach you how to post. Let's do it.
Well, and that's another question is, do you have tryouts? Is it you just sign up?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah. So tryouts are the third week of class. Usually there's a lot of paperwork the kids have to do, not for me, but for the college prior to being allowed to try out. So like concussion testing and things like that. So tryouts are usually around the third week of class when they're able to get all that stuff done. Some schools, if, you know, depending, because there are a lot of club teams out there for the IHSA, they could just, if they want to do the team, they do the team. For me, you know, I'm limited in the spots I have. So, you know, I need to try and fill my roster with, you know, all levels. So just tryouts are really important. I don't put kids on the team prior to seeing them in tryouts because I feel I really need to see them on my horses and see how they respond to my instruction. You know, I'm looking for strong riders, yes, and good riders, yes, but I want coachable kids. You know, coachability is a really huge thing, as well as the team culture. You know, it's they got to buy in, you know, and if they're not going to buy in and they're not coachable, they could be the best rider in the country and I'm not going to put them on the team.
And do you, Belinda, or you, Karen, you two have final say in who joins and who doesn't?
Yeah, it's ultimately my decision.
Okay.
But it's really a collaborative thing here. You know, it's yes, I'm the head coach. I technically do not have an assistant coach, but really Karen and Amanda and Safa, we do it together.
We work together. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a team effort for sure.
It's always fun when Belinda is starting to look for the intro kids, you know, the introductory level riders. Once we're into October and they've started to be in the saddle a little bit, we can say, okay, who has the potential? And, you know, Sasha and Amanda will speak up and say, hey, come look at this one.
Two more questions. Do you have any grants or financial aid available for students who might not be able to come to Skidmore but can ride and want to ride? How does that work? I know that some Division I schools are able to offer those kind of scholarships. Are you able to do that?
Division III does not offer any athletic scholarships ever. That being said, you know, we do have students that go to Skidmore through something called the Opportunity Program that has nothing to do with us, but we have had some of those kids in the Opportunity Program want to ride, and you know, we're able to help them out to be able to participate in our lessons and, you know, work with them on the financial side of things, but there are no true grants or scholarships available.
Well, and that's a tough side of, you know, riding at all is it's an expensive sport. And if you know, whether it's coming to it from a school level or a private level, it's definitely, that's always part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the other side of that too, though, is like, if we, you know, for the team as well as the program, we have helmets that we own and half chaps and boots, and I for the team have, you know, more hunk hosts than I know what to do with and bridges, and my office is full of tall boots. So if they, you know, I have kids that join the team and maybe they don't have the show clothes or don't have show clothes that we particularly like how they fit, I can dress just about anybody. So they don't have the burden of having to purchase that, which is nice.
Well, that's nice. At least you have some, you know, if they can get there, then you can provide the outfit at least and things like that. Could either of you or both share a story of your either a favorite student or a funny experience at a competition or at home?
Oh, gosh.
How many stories are back there in the brain?
Oh, my gosh.
Lots.
I know. I'm like, oh, gosh. Christy, that's a hard one.
I put you right on the spot. Yeah,
you really did. And the only reason I'm struggling is that, and I mean this so sincerely, like in my almost 24 years, there have been so many wonderful students that have passed through our doors that we've had fun with, we've cried with, we've laughed with, that asking for a favorite.
I guess for me, it's not really a set story, but you know, putting these different kids in the show ring in a situation too that's, you know, talking about postseason and trying to win for the team and all that, you know, we are currently the winningest team in the country. We've won nationals 9 times, including last year in 2023. And, you know, these kids are driven. They want to win. They want to do the best they can. And, you know, I have to try and figure out how to put them in the ring. How do I get them in the best mindset to walk in there on a horse they don't know in that high pressure situation to lay it down? And trying to figure out what each individual needs has taken time for me to figure out. And one of our alums, who she, Flavia Durso, she was on the team as an open fences rider, and she rode for the team in 2013 when we won. She was reserve champion individually for the open, reserve champion Cashion that year, and champion in the team open fences class. She needed a distraction. So before she walked in the ring, I would punch her in the leg every single time. Every single time I had to, and not softly, I had to punch her in the thigh before she walked in that ring, and she was good to go.
Just to keep her attention on something besides maybe the nerves that got
exactly. And it was per her request.
Per her request, yeah. Abuse requested.
Abuse requested. Yep. You know, but that was, again, like I don't have any of those now. But you know, the kids I have now, they want my calming essence around them, so to speak.
Sure.
You know, Sadie Nesbitt's one of those at nationals this year. She was my individual or team intermediate fences rider, and she won the team class and was amazing. And before I was over with her to get on the horse, she's with Karen. Where's Belinda? Where's Belinda? Where's Belinda? It's like, she'll be right here. We're good. You know, but yeah, it's just, it's fun getting to figure them out that way.
Yeah. I'm sure you must get to know so many different students over the years, and they each have their own quirks, especially, you know, coming from different barns. It's almost like you get a collection every year of students that are from so many different backgrounds that individuality has to be something that you tune into quite a bit, have to tune into quite a bit.
Yep. Tune in and embrace.
Yeah. Embrace. Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I certainly learned a lot. I know a lot more about if I want to, you know, send somebody there. And like I said, my interest these days is really about what the horses need and want in their lives. And you two do such a good job as far as giving each horse a set of parameters where they can happily exist in. And I think that's probably the most important part.
Yeah. And I will say that that is a high priority. I have to say that, you know, with Sasha and Amanda in the barn a lot, they try very hard to, you know, if you've ever walked into the heart of our barn, you will see that there is a lot of lists that are made, and there is a dry erase board, and it is, you know, command central. And Sasha and Amanda try really hard to make sure they get to know each horse and their personalities and, you know, how long they like to be turned out. And, you know, between that and all four of us really getting to know them under saddle, it's a team effort to make sure that these horses are happy and happy in their jobs and look good, look sound, feel good.
The kids really buy into that as well. Yes. You know, it's always really reassuring to me, you know, not that you ever want a horse not to feel great, but if a horse doesn't feel quite right, the kids are the first one to say, something doesn't feel right. Yeah. Can you watch this?
Good.
You know, again, we have them for a reason, right? Yeah. Like whether it's a soundness, a mental thing or whatever, but you know, that the kids are very, very on top of it, that they're, you know, the horse comes first. We might jump 12 jumps one day that are cross rails. And they're like, nope, I'm happy. I feel good. Let's be done. That's great. Well, like they get it.
And that's just it. The horse has to come first. And if you can keep that up in your program, then everybody's going to be happier.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right. Yep.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot, guys. I so appreciate you coming on here with me. It's been so nice to be able to keep in touch with you while I'm up here in our town, and maybe I'll see you at the next horse show.